This is RTE Radio 1 broadcasting on FM 252 long wave and for the next hour and a half, medium wave. Now, Brendan Balfe presents a special programme. Medium wave, goodbye.
Radio Wedding. Let joy be unconfined.
It was an ancient wireless set that languished in our attic. Its dial was dim, its valves were dead, its knobs were quite rheumatic. I twiddled them and fiddled them like Grandad did in yesteryear. And then an old forgotten sound came faintly to my ear.
Proudly the upright piano is playing the call sign familiar we all used to know. Over the airwaves the signal displaying there's ghosts still alive yet in the old GPO. Programs of yesteryear came flooding to my ear, voices and music from old radio. Features and fun galore, quiz shows and many more, Radio Erin from days long ago.
O'Donnell Abu, the call sign of Radio Erin, which in democratic manner was chosen by public vote, beating God Save Ireland into second place. The tune, ironically, was originally a British marching tune, but for years it epitomised the sound of Irish radio. Today, 82 years after it started, the medium wave service, which carried our signal all over Ireland, is closing down, and the RTE Radio 1 service will continue on FM, longwave, digital and satellite media. This programme marks that occasion with a personal selection of Irish radio, the voices, the programmes, the people who connected with us since the whole thing began in 1926 in a small room in Little Denmark Street, Dublin, when the future president, Douglas Hyde, opened the station 2RN.
From Thomas of the Lord, not really far old and daily for all, who will see me here one in a whale, or who will see in a heaven.
Ceilidh music was a mainstay of 2RN, and when programmes ran short, it was handy to have a station director who could also offer the bar of a song, Seamus Clandillon. But what Dublin had, Cork wanted too. And in 1927, the Cork station 6CK opened, but not for long. It closed again 3 years later. Then in 1932, to coincide with the Eucharistic Congress that summer, a new high-powered medium-wave transmitter opened in Athlone, and the town's name was etched on radio sets all around the world. And a new breed of people were born. They were called listeners. And they heard the news from announcers like Bernadette Plunkett, reading a bulletin in 1939.
The chief items of tonight's news are British relations with Germany, French flying boat leaves Foynes, drastic measures in Bohemia, Mr. Sean Russell released on bail, annual meeting of medical union, death of Englishmen in Shanghai, statement on lost submarine, British royalty in United States, Duce entertains Spanish delegation, hillside fires in Ireland, international labor conference opens, sports results, and the Dublin cattle market report.
We were now known as Radio Erin, and in an effort to keep in touch with the Irish in foreign lands, the Minister for Posts and Telegraphs at the time, Oscar Traynor, approved a shortwave radio service from the Athlone transmitter. It proved to be a short-lived shortwave service, and here's the announcer, Nicholas Barron, from December 1940.
Radio Erin, Aisha Radio Erin. Ireland calling, this is Ireland calling. We commence our programme tonight with the Robert Emmett Cayley Octet playing three set dances. My Miss Forbes Farewell, My Love Is But a Lassie Yet, and Charlie's Welcome. Following that, Agnes O'Kerry will sing two songs, The Ninepenny Fiddle and The Shortcut to the Rosses. Our news review to Day in Ireland will then be given and will be followed by further musical items of which details will be given later. We shall now continue our musical program with Frank O'Higgins, a traditional fiddler, playing the Salamanca and Lady Carberry's reels, followed by Robert McCullough, tenor, who will conclude the program singing Down by the Sally Gardens and Trotten to the Fair.
Down by the Sally Gardens, my love and I did meet. She passed the Sally Gardens with little snow-white feet.
And if ever there was a voice of Ireland, it was that of John McCormack there. Then we were at war, and in 1945, at the end, in one of the most listened to broadcasts in Irish radio history, the Taoiseach Eamon de Valera replied to the British Prime Minister Winston Churchill, who, in his victory speech on BBC Radio, castigated the Irish government on its policy of neutrality during the emergency.
This was indeed a deadly moment in our life. And if it had not been for the loyalty and friendship of Northern Ireland, we should have been forced to come to close quarters with Mr. de Valera or perish forever from the earth. However, with the restraint and poise to which I say, history will find few parallels, His Majesty's government never laid a violent hand upon them, though at times it would have been quite easy and quite natural. And we left the de Valera government to frolic with the German and later with the Japanese representatives to their heart's content.
Certain newspapers have been very persistent in looking for my answer to Mr. Churchill's recent broadcast. I know the kind of answer I am expected to make. I know the answer that first springs to the lips of every man of Irish blood who heard or read that speech, no matter in what circumstances or in what part of the world he found himself. I know the reply I would have given a quarter of a century ago. But I have deliberately decided that this is not the reply I shall make tonight. I shall strive not to be guilty of adding any fuel to the flames of hatred and passion, which, if continued to be fed, promise to burn up whatever is left by the war of decent human feeling in Europe. Allowances can be made for Mr. Churchill's statement, however unworthy, in the first flush of his victory. No such excuse can be found for me in this quieter atmosphere. There are, however, some things which it is my duty to say, some things which it is essential to say. I shall try to say them as dispassionately as I can. Mr. Churchill makes it clear that in certain circumstances he would have violated our neutrality and that he would justify his action by Britain's necessity. It seems strange to me that Mr. Churchill does not see that this, if accepted, would mean that Britain's necessity would become a moral code, and that when this necessity was sufficiently great, other people's rights were not to count. It is quite true that other great powers believe in this same code in their own regard and have behaved in accordance with it. That is precisely why we have the disastrous successions of wars. World War Number One, World War Number Two, and shall it be World War Number Three? Surely Mr. Churchill must see that if his contention be admitted in our regard, a like justification can be framed for similar acts of aggression elsewhere. And no small nation adjoining a great power could ever hope to be permitted to go its own way in peace.
Round the fire.
We must have everything ready before the boys arrive.
Yes, we mustn't make any mistakes. Halloween, like Christmas, comes for once a year. What are you doing there, Molly?
Oh, I'm getting the saucers ready.
The saucers? But it's too early to start laying the table for tea.
How are you? These saucers are not for tea. They're to foretell our future husbands.
Our future husbands? But how, Molly?
Let me tell it to Una, Molly. You see, Una, we place these three saucers on the table about 3 foot apart.
Yes.
You see?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then, one saucer contains clean water.
From 1946, Round the Fire, perhaps inspired by De Valera's cosy homesteads, athletic youths and homely maidens. Then in 1947, beat changes for Radio Erin. The shortwave project was on again, and to prepare for it, we got a news reporter, an outside broadcast unit, a symphony orchestra and a light orchestra. But the shortwave service never happened. Ireland's ambitions to look outwards were thwarted when the new government cancelled it, and for good measure also threw out the Aer Lingus proposal for a transatlantic air service from Rhinanna in Shannon. As James Dillon put it in the leaden wit of Doyle Aaron,
I venture to swear that 5 years from today, when the rabbits start playing leapfrog below in Rhinanna, the masts which are to direct the radio to the United States of America will be converted into knitting machines to knit the wool off the rabbits from Rhinanna.
But what radio had, radio held. The outside broadcast unit enabled us to hear the real sound of Ireland as Seamus Ellis took to the roads to capture the authentic folk music of the country, the beginning of Radio Erin's folk music collection.
Hello, my honest neighbour. You're welcome into any old farmstead in Tipperary at any hour of the night.
Thank you very much.
I happen to be the proprietor of this house. My name is Patsy Fagan from Ballinamona. Anyhow, that's your name, sir.
My name is Seamus Ennis.
Pleased to meet you, Seamus Ennis. You're quite welcome into the old-fashioned dance.
Well, thank you very much.
What's the name of God is that old thing you have there in your hand? The name of God is...
It's a microphone.
A microphone?
Seamus Ennis at a threshing dance in Ballinamona, County Tipperary. On the artistic front, as well as the two orchestras, we also got a company of actors, the Radio Erin Players. Auditions were held in August 1947.
Mary Mulvey. It is a curious fact that novelists have a way of making us believe that luncheon parties are invariably memorable for something very witty that was said, or for something very wise that was done. But they seldom spare a word for what was eaten.
Leo Layden, let us, sir, embrace some system or other before we end this session. Do you mean to tax America and to draw a productive revenue from thence?
Ailing heart. It is part of the novelist's convention not to mention soup and salmon and ducklings, as if soup and salmon and ducklings were of no importance whatsoever.
Joe Lynch, name, fix, ascertain this revenue. Settle its quantity, define its objects, provide for its collection, and then fight when you have something to fight for.
Deirdre O'Mara, it is a curious fact that novelists have a way of making us believe that luncheon parties are invariably memorable for something very witty that was said, or for something very wise that was done.
Thomas Studley, if you murder, rob. If you kill, take possession. And do not appear in the character of madmen as well as assassins. Violent, vindictive, bloody and tyrannical without an object. but may better counsels guide you.
The much-loved Radio Erin players became the highlight of Sunday night's programmes, particularly when they were joined by guest stars like Micheál MacLiamore in Dennis Johnson's The Old Lady Says No.
Shall we sit down together for a while, here on the hillside where we can look down over the city and watch the lights twinkle and wink to each other? Our city. Our willful, wicked old city. I think that I shall go to sleep here, my head on your shoulder. But I was so right to go on. Strumpet City in the sunset, suckling the bastard brats of Scot, of Englishry, of Huguenot, brave sons breaking from the womb, wild sons fleeing from their mother, willful city of savage dreamers, so old, so sick with memories. Old mother, some they say are damned, but you one day, I think, will walk the streets of paradise. Head high and unashamed. There. Now let my epitaph be written.
Radio Erin in the 1940s did sound solemn, even a little po-faced. Announcers sounded, too, as if they were auditioning for the BBC.
Here is the news. 26 people are believed to have been killed in a flying boat which crashed into the sea after leaving Hong Kong yesterday for the Portuguese colony of Macau. Only one passenger, a Chinese, of the 27 people aboard, was rescued, but search is being carried out for others whom it is hoped may still be afloat in the sea. The Pigs and Bacon Commission has issued a statement about a newspaper report to the effect that a number of Cork grocery and provision store owners were informed during the week that curers would not be able to give them their full quota.
It will be mainly cloudy with some periods locally. It will be rather cold. I take it that you'll read some bright periods locally, but the world so misses. And here is the news. Reports from Bombay tonight state that some 20 persons have been killed and 100 injured in communal disturbances in the city. The stoppage of work at the Ruhr has spread to 4 coal mines in the Dortmund area, where about 4,000 miners are affected. General de Gaulle has attended a ceremony in Normandy commemorating the British-Canadian commando raid of February 1942. He said the day would come when the French people would brush aside all bad and evil organizations and replace them by a wide movement such as the resistance movement during the occupation. Mr. Dempsey, General Manager of Aer Lingus, speaking on civil aviation in Ireland at Cork tonight, said that this country, with the development of aviation, had moved into the centre of a world whose unification was being rapidly accomplished by the conquest of the air. A Jewish illegal immigrant ship with 1,600 passengers aboard was stated tonight to be approaching Haifa.
The refined tones of Sheila Nevrian and Pat Holland from 1947. But there were new voices on the way, one whose voice seemed to be made for medium wave particularly. He cut through the static like a laser beam. Micheál O'Hare.
Mick Higgins appears to be the short free taker today. Walking up now, slowly. The trot, the kick, and it's a low one. Right in towards the goal, trying to get the goal! It's the goal! A goal by Tony Tye.
Celebration of the Franciscans. We salute that community in particular, a community which owes so much to Father Luke Wadding. From Cove come salutations to a son in the Collegio Missionari Porta Latina, and down Wicklow Way and in Offaly, they're thinking today of a son in the American forces in Karlsruhe, Germany.
Another voice brought a welcome touch of show business to Irish radio.
And from the crowded foyer of the Theatre Royal Dublin, this is Eamon Andrews saying hello and welcome. It's quite an exciting scene in the best movie picture traditions of flash and glamour and publicity. And an effort has been made to cordon off the crowd. They're crowding outside, crowding inside. They're all pushing forward to meet these glamorous film stars who are coming in here tonight and they're already beginning to arrive. And I wanted to have time to describe to you just what this scene looks like. We may get a chance later on, but coming in that door now is one of the first stars of Captain Boycott, Eddie McSweeney, who's handling all this and bringing him up to the microphone. I want you to meet, oh, look who it is. It's the bailiff. Would you like to meet the bailiff?
Acora. Begorra, it's nice to be in this fair city of yours. Yes, and I'm looking forward to the reaction of the public.
But do you know who that was? It was Mervyn Johns, who plays the bailiff in Captain Boycott. Did you like playing it, Mervyn?
Oh, it was grand. The competition of my Irish and your people is terrific. They're natural actors. They remind me of the Welsh.
All right, Mervyn Johns.
And in the first interview series on radio, Microphone Parade, Eamon Andrews interviewed the man who described the long tiled corridor in the GPO as the longest row of lavatories in the world, the conductor John Barbarolli, appearing in 1947 at the Theatre Royal with the Halle Orchestra.
And it's been a great pleasure meeting you here, Mr. Barbarolli, and thank you for coming into us tonight.
Great pleasure always to come back to this lovely old city, which reminds me so much of the lovely Georgian Bloomsbury, alas, no more, in which I was born. So I have to come and be reborn in Merrion Square and those lovely streets around when I pay my annual visit.
The first Irishman to set foot in America was Saint Brendan the Navigator, for it was he discovered America, although he kept his mouth shut about it. How long ago would that be so, says Casey, since the first Irishman set foot in America? I can answer that too, says O'Brien, for Saint Brendan was born in Feenet in the County Kerry about the year 500 AD, and he died in Annacoon in the County Galway about 580. We'll take it now that he did his navigating in his prime, say, between the years 525 and 540. Add all that up and take it from the year we're living in, and it will bring you to within a hen's kick of 1,400 years since the first Irishman set foot in America. Is that all you know, says Casey? Irish people were going to America before that. Can you prove it, says O'Brien? Oh, indeed, says Casey, I can prove it. Otherwise, I wouldn't have drawn it down. My own granduncle, Ted Flor, he was going to America after the famine in a sailing vessel they were. And they were becalmed one evening late about 200 miles out from the coast of the County Clare. So they threw out the anchor and they went to bed for the night. What did they want up for? In the morning, there was a nice breeze blowing, and they pulled in the anchor. And what was caught onto the hook of it but the wheel of a horse car? And what does that prove, says O'Brien? It proves, says Casey, that Irish people were going to America by road before the flood.
Radio Shanachie, Eamon Kelly and Sean Maguire's definitive recording of The Mason's Apron. The other new voice to come to add some cheer to a somewhat dull Sunday night was that of...